Jimenez says that Rabbi Shimon HaAmsuli was one of the very great rabbis at the time of Rabbi Akiva. And he set about performing a task that was historic. He said that every word in the Torah has infinite depth, because just as Hashem is infinite, every part of Hashem, kaviyachol, is infinite too. The word of Hashem is Hashem. Therefore, Hashem's words too are infinite in depth. The Torah is all the words of Hashem. Therefore, every word in the Torah is so deep that a person can study it for a lifetime and never reach the tiniest fraction of the true depth of that word. As, for example, we find the deepest sefer out is the Tikkuni Zohar, and the Tikkuni Zohar consists of 70 chapters on only one word of the Chumash, the Torah, Bereshit. You can have a whole Tikkuni Zohar on the next word also, and so on. And even the Tikkuni Zohar itself, as deep as it is, with the 70 chapters, covers only a certain amount of that word. There is much more than just that. Rabbi Shimon HaAmsuli said, there is one word in the Torah that is used more often than any other word, yet this word seems to be superfluous, redundant. That is, it has no meaning, it has no bearing on the sentence, but yet it is found so often. This is the word et, et aleph taf. For example, Bereshit bara Elokim, beginning Hashem created, et hashamayim, the heavens, the et haaretz, and the earth. Well, you cannot say that et means the, because you say et hashamayim, the heavens. Ha is the, shamayim, heaven, hashamayim, the heaven. What does et mean? Be et haaretz, and so on. What is this word that has no meaning, doesn't change a sentence, has no effect on a sentence, and yet, despite this, it is found so often? When we say that every single word of the Torah has infinite meaning, Rabbi Shimon HaAmsuli set out, beginning the Chumash, from beginning to end, to show every place where the word et is found, there is a definite message included, involved. And each word et that he came to, he showed this word et means to teach us something additional. Just as, for example, in the first sentence, Bereshit, in the beginning, bara Elokim, Hashem created et hashamayim. Shamayim means the heavens. The heavens, right. Et means to add. To teach us that in addition to the heaven, everything, beginning to end, that was found in the heavens, was created at the same time. V'et ha'aretz, the earth, everything in the earth too. Meant that it was created during the 6 days of creation. In the beginning, the very first moment, everything in the heavens, on the earth, were created simultaneously. Hashem made them serve their purpose during the 6 days of creation. So this word et, just as in that first sentence, Rabbi Shimon HaAmsuli went on methodically, carefully, every word et he came to, he interpreted and showed a deep meaning involved. And always, the et means to add much more than we would think. What is this word et that is so strange? It has no meaning, and yet it includes so much. And why is it called et? The word et consists of two letters. First letter of the alphabet, and the last letter, aleph and taf, which means that this is all-inclusive. Beginning to end, everything possible is found, is added in this one word et. So the Gemara says that he continued on. Every time he came to the word et, he would add a lesson until he came to one pasuk, but he stopped short. He came to the pasuk which says, et Hashem Elokecha Tirah. You should fear Hashem. It doesn't say Hashem Elokecha Tirah, fear Hashem. It says et Hashem Elokecha Tirah. You should fear Hashem. So he stopped. He said, this is the limit. Here I give up. He goes, every place you add something of equal quality, or more. How can you add something that is equal to Hashem? Chas v'shalom, more. So he said, here I must give up. Here I have come to a point where I find that I have been this broomer. I maintained always that the word et adds something, teaches us something. Why? Because I wanted to show that every word of the Torah is so meaningful and so deep. This was my purpose. Now I must give up. So the student said to him, Rabbi, but what's going to happen to all the it that you said until now. What will happen to them? If you're going to stop now, people will say you were wrong before too. All your it's are worthless. He said, if people will say that, they're welcome to it. Because just as I have until now received reward for every derasha, every explanation I gave for it, my reward is the fact that I showed the holiness and depth of the Torah of every smallest word. That's how I will now receive reward for not giving it to Hashem, for not explaining this it. To show my respect for Hashem is so great that here I refuse to offer any explanation whatsoever. And this is why he stopped. The question is, of course, why didn't he stop before? This pasuk, et Hashem Elokecha tira, is in the latter part of the Chumash. Before this pasuk, you have another pasuk, which says, Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha. You should love Hashem. Et Hashem. How come there he did accept that word et to et? Here he didn't. There he did explain the et to et something, as we'll soon see. Here he did not. What is the difference? Here, so we'll see shortly. First, what happened to this case? He stopped right here, and he said, that's enough. I don't go any further. Later, Rabbi Akiva came. The Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva came, and he said, I will explain this it. What can you add to this pasuk? Fear Hashem? Or can you add that is equal, that requires as much fear? A Talmid Chacham. A Chacham, a rabbi, is supposed to be accorded the same fear and respect as you have for Hashem. And this is what the halacha is. Torah says that the same fear that a person has for Hashem, he must have for a Chacham. Now, what is the... There seems to be a debate here. Controversy. And again, the question is, why did Rabbi Shimon HaAm Suni accept the word et? In the first pasuk, Ye'ahabta et Hashem Elokecha, you should love Hashem. There he did say these words, love Hashem and equally love a Chacham. Why? Because this we can understand. Give forth Ahava for a Chacham, that's a special mitzvah. But to say fear a Chacham, you can't use that word fear as you fear Hashem. In the case of fearing Hashem, you fear the punishment that Hashem can mete out. There is Gehinon. There is death. Chas v'shalom. Hashem give a person any kind of punishment. By a Chacham, what punishment can you expect? You get a Chacham who's very small, he's lightweight, he can hardly lift his hands. What can he do to hurt you? How can you compare the fear of a Chacham, who is human, to fear of Hashem above? Therefore, by Ahava, we could say that, but not by Yid'ah, by fear. Rabbi Akiva came and said, there is to be a fear of a Chacham too, because we find that punishment is equal. Equal and even surpasses. We always say et means to add even more. Greater is the fear of a Chacham than the fear of Hashem. Why? Because of this very reason, because of punishment. The Zohar Kadosh tells us that when Yeravam ben Nevat, first king of the 10 tribes of Israel, who tore the Jews away from the son of King, the grandson of King David, the son of King Shlomo, he divided the Jews into 2 sections. And how did he do it? He taught them to worship idols so they would not have to go to the Beit HaMikdash, to the Holy Temple. So the prophet Ado came to warn him. He was standing at a mizbeach, at an altar, offering a sacrifice to this idol. Prophet Ado warned him, stop this idol worship, or Hashem will tear the kingdom away from you. Yeravam heard that, so he raised his hand to strike this prophet. Immediately, his hand shrank. It shriveled up. He cried out pain until Ado the prophet prayed for him, and his hand was cured. Returned to normal. Zohar Kadosh says, notice the difference in punishment. Here he was using both hands for the sake of offering the sacrifice to this idol. Whom was he rebelling against? Hashem. He showed no fear of Hashem. In worshiping the idols, did he receive a punishment immediately? His hands remained normal. The moment he dared to raise his hands to the Navi, to the prophet, his hand shriveled immediately, which shows that Hashem is much more particular about the kavod, the respect for a tzaddik, than the respect for Hashem. Hashem is much quicker to punish those who show disrespect to a tzaddik, even than those who show disrespect to Hashem. Well, therefore, Rabbi Akiva said, Yir'ah, fear Hashem, fear also a Chacham, because the punishment there is the same and even more. Plus the fact that we find many times in the Gemara that when a tzaddik was slighted, something was done wrong, the tzaddikim in the Gemara would just look at the person when he would have his death. He would turn it to a pile of bones. So you do find this case of punishment in the case of a Tamid Chacham too. Now, this is sort of off topic, and yet it's on topic. In other words, it's not written anywhere. It's said in a very light vein. Not seriously, but the moral here is a serious one. There are some who explain this in a lighter vein to mean, Rabbi Shimon HaAmsuni, if you notice the words of the Gemara's would fit perfectly. Rabbi Shimon HaAmsuni was teaching his students, meaning he was the rabbi of that community. He was teaching them the Torah very deeply, and he explained, he interpreted the words of the Torah. Every time he came to Et, he explained it and interpreted it. This was the duty of a rabbi. When he came to the Pasuk, which said, respect, fear Hashem, the only thing you can add there is the Chacham, the rabbi, he stopped. Why did he stop? Because he figured, if I tell them, fear a Chacham, who am I speaking about myself? That's not nice. It's embarrassing. And they will say, this is not really true. He means it for his own sake. He wants to get more kavod. He wants us to fear him so that we won't do anything against his wishes. So they said to him, why did you stop? He said, because just as I receive reward for all the other it that I explained, what's my reward? My wages. I receive wages as a rabbi to teach Torah. That's how I will receive reward for stopping here. If I say this the way I want to explain it, I'm liable to be fired. This rabbi is teaching us Torah for his own kavod. So by stopping here, I'll continue to receive wages. That's why I stopped. Notice the Gemara says, until Rabbi Akiva came. You never find that. You usually say Rabbi Akiva says, does Rabbi Akiva came and taught. Rabbi Akiva was a rabbi of a different city. He came to the city of Rabbi Shimon HaAmsuni. This was not his shul. He wasn't receiving wages here. He was free to speak. He said to the Botai, what your rabbi cannot say, I'll tell you. The rule is, if Pasuk means to teach us, you must fear and respect a rabbi. I'm not afraid of being fired by you. I can speak openly, bravely, courageously. What your rabbi couldn't say, I'll say for him. Now, if you have any complaints, you have it to me. But you must obey this rule henceforth. You must know that, above all, respect your rabbi. As we said, this is in a light vein, and the words fit in the Gemara, but the moral of the lesson is a very true one, because we find that, especially modern times, the Kavod Torah has fallen. Bar Minan. Many shuls today where rabbis are hired, and instead of receiving the Kavod of Torah, as they should, respect that is due a rabbi, they are considered employees. They have a shemesh, they have a caretaker, they have a rabbi. Each one is an employee doing his duty. If he fulfills his duty according to the wishes of the board of directors, or to the officers of the knis, good. If not, they have a right to fire him. If he says anything that is against their ideas, their principles, if he's too orthodox for them, or he dictates certain principles of Torah which they don't agree with, they have the freedom of firing him and getting a different employee rabbi who will coincide with their ideas. This is what the Torah warns us. You cannot leave Hashem. You cannot disagree with Hashem. You must show fear and respect. When your rabbi says, this is the halacha, this is the din, and it's difficult for you to find out here's a new law that you thought you were not restricted by, you can't say, well, I have a simple solution. I'll go to a different rabbi, or I'll have a different rabbi come here. We can release this one. We can always get another one for the price we pay. This is not a question of price. A rabbi is not taken through wages. Wages that are paid are not paid for the Torah he teaches. The respect, the obedience is through the law of Torah, just as the respect for Hashem. Wages are a separate item. It's a matter of time being expended, and not the Torah that is being taught. This is what Rabbi Akiva taught us, that above all, the fear or the respect for a Chacham should be no less than the fear and respect for Hashem. We have learned that a person who shows this respect to a rabbi is given the greatest reward. The greatest nachat a person can receive in life is to see his children going on the right path of Torah. A person through this can be zocheh to have children who become Talmidei Chachamim, to have his daughters marry Talmidei Chachamim, that he himself can become a Talmid Chacham through this. One who shows ahava, love, and yirah, respect for a Talmid Chacham, the Gemara says, the zocheh, that his children become Talmidei Chachamim, that he himself too will develop in Torah. Gemara says, there are many innovations that come into this world. We note that former generations were devoid of certain modern inventions. It seems that generations progress. Science advances, and there's a new standard of living with inventions that make life easier. And it appears as though the mentality of man has advanced. Of course, we are taught many times that this is not so. Every invention that exists has already been prepared in heaven, and there's a date set on every one of them as to when this invention shall be revealed to the world. When that date comes, Hashem places this thought into the mind of certain scientists or inventors, and it is then revealed to the world. Not because they are wiser. The contrary, the wisdom has dwindled. The wise men of the past were far superior in mentality and wisdom than the wise men of the present. But one thing has advanced, and that is ge'avah, conceit. We find that the wise men of today, scientists of today, are that conceited that when they come out with a discovery or an invention, they pride themselves and look for a tremendous amount of kavod, of honor from the public. Therefore, the Yelida tells us, very interestingly, Labedazal dwells on this point a lot, that if we observe closely, go back to practically all of the inventions in the past, we will notice that all inventors or discoverers have been trapped and destroyed by their own inventions. The Yelida says that, for example, the one who carves out a special type of ladle, spoon, and he prides himself he has invented a new type of spoon. The result is that he will, with his spoon, he will eat hot soup, it'll burn his tongue. Blame it on his spoon. The one who has invented a type of chain for prisoners, a leg chain, leg irons, or let's say even for animals, a bear trap. He invented a new type of trap to capture an animal. This person will be caught up in his own trap. The one that will have invented new types of weapons, gunpowder, or so on, that person will die through his own discovery, his own invention. We find that in the recent past, too, the one that discovered America died because of it. All those famous inventors and discoverers were caught and destroyed through their own desire for kavod. That which they thought brought them kavod instead turned out to be their doom. So that, the Gemara says, if a person is zocheh, that to him is given the privilege of revealing something which is already in existence in heaven, he should give the credit where it is due to heaven, to Hashem, not to feel too proud, not to feel that it was his ability, his wisdom, his power that did it. It is Hashem who gives advice and knowledge to a person, reveals it to a person. If a person is zocheh to understand that thoroughly, then he will be safe. Then his own creation will not destroy him, because the kavod will return back to its origin, to Hashem. Yehuda says, but people are generally invited out to feasts, parties, to occasions. Yehuda warns that a Talmid Chacham, a learned person, should beware never to attend a banquet or a feast or luncheon that is not a Seudat Mitzvah, banquet of a Mitzvah. It is forbidden for a Talmid Chacham to go to an ordinary luncheon. If it is through that mitzvah, for example, brit milah, a bar mitzvah, or wedding, where there's a mitzvah involved, then he should go to attend that lunch, that feast. Otherwise, he should not attend it. But even it says, one that is not a sudat mitzvah, well, for example, what? In other words, one that is the opposite of sudat mitzvah. Which one, for example? We're not speaking about unkosher food, naturally. Speaking about a feast that in itself, the entire concept of the feast is not a mitzvah. The Gemara answers, for example, a wedding where the bride is the daughter of a Kohen and the groom is the Yisrael. Yachas, importance, the Kohen stands much higher than a Yisrael. Here, they are combining, merging one of importance with one of much lower importance. This is not a mitzvah. You go to a wedding where the daughter of a Kohen is marrying a Yisrael, this is a Suda that is not a mitzvah. Or, where the daughter of a Talmid Chacham comes from an important family, is marrying an Amharetz, an illiterate, a boor, this is a Suda that is not a mitzvah, that a Talmid Chacham should not accept an invitation to this Suda, to this wedding. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan said, but in the case of a Bat Kohen, daughter of a Kohen who marries a Yisrael, know that this match will not prove to be successful. What will happen? As the Pasuk says, that the daughter of a Kohen, speaking about the fact that as while she is a daughter of a Kohen, she can eat Terumah, it's the holy food that is given to a Kohen. Once she becomes married, she cannot eat Terumah anymore. But if she becomes a widow or divorced, or she has no children, then she can return to become a daughter of a Kohen. This is what will happen in a case like that, Chas v'Shalom. She marries a Yisrael. The result will be that she will either become divorced, widowed, or have no children, Chas v'Shalom. The Gemara asks, what Rabbi Yochanan himself said, person wants to become wealthy, attach yourself to the family of Aharon, which means the Kohanim. Marry the daughter of a Kohen, and you become wealthy, which means it's a successful marriage. Why does he say here that this will end in failure? He then answers, if he is a Talmid Chacham and he marries a daughter of a Kohen, this will be successful in every respect to become wealthy. But if he is an Am Haaretz, then he marries daughter of a Kohen, this will end in failure. Even this is, if Yehoshua was a Yisrael, he married the daughter of a Kohen, and he became sick, ill, immediately. He said, what's wrong? Aharon, HaKohen, is not satisfied with me. He doesn't want me to become attached to his family, to his children. Immediately he became cured, to show that the illness was not due to this match. Yimele says that another rabbi married the daughter of a Kohen. He was zocher to have two children. He came very great rabbis. The papa said, the reason I became rich, because I married the daughter of a Kohen. Now the Gemara says, as far as marriages are concerned, what advice are we given? Looking for a marriage. Those who are married, of course, can judge by this if they did right. Those who are not married can take this advice. The Gemara says, first of all, above all, a person should sell everything he has in order to be zochet to marry the daughter of a Talmid Chacham, a learned person, Ben Torah. That's the most important thing of all. Because this will determine the status of his children if he passes away, or if he has to leave town, then the children are left with the mother alone. He knows they will not be neglected as far as religion and Torah is concerned. If he marries the daughter of an Am Haaretz, then woe is to those children who have that kind of a mother to take care of them alone. This should be his first concern. Be certain to marry the daughter of a Talmid Chacham, above all else. This resembles one who marries the daughter of a Talmid Chacham, as the Gemara says, a person should sell everything he has in order to do that. At the same time, a person should sell everything he has, this means make every sacrifice possible, and be sure to marry off your daughter to a Talmid Chacham also, because then this match, this mating, is similar to the merging of a rich vine of grapes to another vine of grapes. This is something that's acceptable and good. If a person marries the daughter of an Am Haaretz, This is like a rich vine and grapes merging with a thorn bush. This is something that's very unacceptable. Now, we have to understand a vital point here, interesting point. Emet tells us two things elsewhere. One, that the person seeks to marry, one thing he should look for in his bride is the background, the family, especially the brothers of the bride. Of course, the Emet says the children will generally take after the mother's brothers, so that person that they're marrying should always see that the mother's brothers are learned people, religious, well-educated, because his children will take after them. At the same time, the Gemara tells us that in order to show people that Torah is something you have to strive for, you cannot get it without working for it. You cannot inherit it. A king inherits the crown. King's son becomes a king automatically after him. A Kohen inherits the importance of the crown of Kehuna, but Torah cannot be inherited. You cannot leave Torah as a bequest to children. They must strive for it. Therefore, the Gemara says, invariably, we find that somehow the children of a Talmid Chacham are not Talmidei Chachamim. They themselves are not that learned. Why? Because if they were, people would say, well, the only way to have Torah knowledge is to have a father who is a Ben Torah, Talmid Chacham. If the person's father is not a Talmid Chacham, he has no hope. Therefore, usually the sons of Talmidei Chachamim are not Talmidei Chachamim themselves, show that Torah is not inherited. Now, according to these two statements we just said, a person, we said, should seek out the daughter of a Talmid Chacham, marry only the daughter of a learned person. But her father is a Talmid Chacham, and that means, as we said, generally he will have sons who are not Talmidei Chachamim, sons who are Amharits. That means that this daughter of a Talmid Chacham is going to have brothers who are Amharits. How could you marry her if your children will take after her brothers? So there is a risk here, a danger that is so great. What is the use of marrying the daughter of a Talmid Chacham if you are endangering placing your children in jeopardy? Therefore, this is what the Gemara means. If your kavana is, for the sake of the mitzvah, you're marrying her, when you had the opportunity to marry the daughter of an Amharitz, the daughter of a wealthy man, you could have married for money, for looks, the Gemara says, for other physical reasons, but you wanted to marry one that comes from the right upbringing, brought up by a house that is religious and learned, this mitzvah is so great that it will overshadow all other threats. You will not be in danger even of having your children take after her brothers if they are not Talmidei Chachamim. This is the reward for it. The mitzvah of seeking out daughter of a Talmid Chacham because you want the purity in your bride, of knowledge, of upbringing your Torah, this will protect you even from that we said the majority of children take after the brothers of the bride. This will not be one of the majority. This will be the minority, because he was a chet through your covenant of mitzvah. We'll explain later what is meant by the opposite of a Talmid Chacham. First, the Gemara tells us there are so many people in the world, and there are so few Talmidei Chachamim. Not everyone can be zochet to get the daughter of a Talmid Chacham, a big rabbi. Just a few big rabbis in the world, they have just a few daughters, and there are millions of people who have sons that want to get married. You can't divide these few to so many that are in need. What should a person do? Even as this is the advice for one who is going to get married. First, you try to find the daughter of a Talmid Chacham. If you succeed, good. If not, take the next best. The next best is the outstanding people of that generation. In other words, they are not that learned. They're not that great and not as big as Gaon learned, but they are leading people of the generation recognized as leaders. They are next in line to these Talmidei Chachamim. If there are only a few leaders and they do not have any daughters available, then the next best is the heads of the Knis, the high officials of the Knis. That's a strange thing. We'll explain that soon. So we'll shed light upon that. In other words, the high officers. If he cannot find a daughter among these, Next one is to take the daughter of the one that collects tzedakah, one who goes out collecting tzedakah, not for himself, chas v'shalom, one who works for the sake of yeshivot, without pay, naturally. His devotion is raising money for charity. It's a so big a mitzvah that he is next in line. Daughter should be sought out after these. If there too he does not find a daughter among them, then he should marry the daughter of those who teach children. Teachers in yeshivot, Talmud Torah, who teach children because they are next in line. But under no condition should he marry a daughter of an Am HaAretz, because that is the same as marrying an animal. Which means, the Yelenis says, they, the Am HaAretz, compared to a rodent, it's the lowest form of life. And the daughter of an Am HaAretz is like an animal. Imagine being married to living with an animal. Now, explain this, these harsh statements about Am HaAretz. What is this Am HaAretz who is considered so poisonous? The word Am HaAretz regularly is accepted as an illiterate, one who does not study Torah. Talmid Chacham, one who is learned in Torah. Am HaAretz, one is an illiterate. He hasn't studied. A person who hasn't studied Torah, is he that dead, chas v'shalom, to be called a rodent? His daughter is an animal? Difficult to understand that. Now, therefore, the Gemara itself asks that question. What is an Am HaAretz? And there was a debate among the rabbis in the Gemara. One says an Am HaAretz is one who does not even bother to say Kriyat Shema morning and night. So in other words, he lives like an animal. He gets up in the morning, instead of sowing first and then going to eat, he gets up and he eats. This is the life of an animal. Another rabbi says one who is that low, he does not put on tefillin. Another one says he doesn't wear tzitzit. Another one says he doesn't have a mezuzah on his doors. Finally, last rabbi says, and this is the one that is accepted mostly, even one who is learned, very learned in Torah, but he does not serve a Talmid Chacham, he does not serve a rabbi, meaning he does not have faith in rabbis, he does not have faith in tzaddikim, that person is an Am HaAretz. Now, Rabbi Netanzel says that to prove this, this point is so true. One who does not have emunah in a tzaddik, as the Pasuk in the Torah says, Vaya'aminu b'Hashem b'Moshe Abdo. Faith in Hashem and in Moshe Rabbeinu was considered as one. You cannot have one without the other. So one who does not have a munah tzadikim, he is an Am HaAretz. Therefore, the Gemara uses the word lo shimesh. He does not serve a rabbi, does not serve a tzaddik, because we see these two are direct opposites. Talmid Chacham doesn't say Chacham, it says Talmid Chacham. He is good, he is a student of a Chacham. Student, he serves. Am HaAretz must be the opposite. He's not the student of a Chacham. He does not serve a Chacham. He does not believe in Chachamim. This is what's meant by Am HaAretz. And therefore, when we say that a person has not learned Torah, he is not literate, he is not educated in Torah, that does not make him an Am HaAretz. So when we said before that the leaders of the Knis are important, we mean to say not that they are more learned, not that a person is more learned, but that person is more mikayim, he fulfills the mitzvot more. A very rich person who is not learned is not an Am HaAretz if he uses his money to support Torah. But he is the same as Talmid Chacham. So the daughter of an Am HaAretz means not the daughter of an illiterate. This illiterate or not learned person could be as great as a Talmid Chacham because he does serve as an official in the Knis. He does use his money for purposes of Torah. He does obey and fulfill the mitzvot of Torah as far as selling tefillin, tzitzit, mezuzah. He has emunah and tzaddikim. No, he cannot learn that well. And therefore, too, this would shed light on the word bat Talmid Chacham. A person should sell all he has and marry the daughter of a Talmid Chacham. What is meant by that? Does that mean that the daughter of one who is not learned is not fit to marry? Chas v'shalom. What does bat Talmid Chacham mean? We said that the point is that she will bring up her children properly. So she could be the daughter of an illiterate, but she is called the daughter of a Talmid Chacham because it means that she was raised. She went to Bet Yaakov, for example. She went to Talmud Torah. She learned Torah. She is the daughter, meaning, just like we say, a Ben Torah. One who studies Torah is called a son of Torah. She's a daughter of a Talmid Chacham, meaning that she has fulfilled her requirements in the study of Torah. She was brought up in the religious manner, learned manner, Therefore, she too can classify as the daughter of a Talmid Chacham. This is what's meant by Talmid Chacham and Amharis. To avoid contact with the Amharis, doesn't have this proper faith, and to associate himself only with Talmidei Chachamim, those who learn Torah, or those who support Torah, or those who have emunah in Torah and fulfill the mitzvot of the Torah.
But the Amharis is considered the same as a rodent. His daughter is considered the same as an animal, because there is no semblance of Torah at all. If this daughter of an Amharis means one who is brought up in the same manner, she is brought up in a manner where she does not fulfill the mitzvot of Torah, she never sees the mitzvah tzitzit tefillin, mezuzah, or selling, and she will mock this. Therefore, we can understand that she'll bring up her children in the same manner. One who marries her will jeopardize the religious upbringing of his own children. That's why the Torah says, the Gemara says, at all costs, avoid the risk, the danger of marrying a bat amha'aretz, daughter of one, meaning one who was brought up in that manner. At all costs, sell whatever you have possible and marry a daughter of a Talmid Chacham. By the same token, a person, when we say a person should sell whatever he has and marry off his daughter to a Talmid Chacham, this means even though that person is not learned, but he himself is one who fulfills these mitzvot, he wants his daughter to live, to continue to live a religious life, and the only solution to that is to marry off his daughter to one who is a Talmid Chacham. This is considered a compatible match, a perfect match, like the vine of a grape merging with another one. This is a pure and perfect match. This is what a person should strive for, both for himself and for his daughter's mate.
Baruch Hashem.